to convey.
Agent Wynn worked in the field for years. She was a good agent, as I said. After she had her children, she was reassigned to the IG's office at DOD, but she still worked closely with DCIS in all of its investigation sectors. And of course, she continued to work for us.
How did that get her assigned to a hit list she wasn't supposed to be on? Asked Roby. And how can something like this happen anyway? I know we're clandestine, but we're also part of an organization with checks and balances.
Rogue traders lose billions of dollars of institutional money all the time. And those organizations are bigger and better funded than we are. And still it happens. If one person, or more likely a small group of people, are determined enough, they can accomplish the impossible.
I saw her go into the building last night. She had no kids with her.
Apparently they were with a sitter she's used before that lives in the building. This sitter took them to the apartment when Agent Wynn returned home.
Okay. What did Wynn stumble on that got her killed?
Blue Man looked curious.
How do you know she stumbled onto anything?
She lived in a crappy apartment with two little kids. There were legal docs on her table in the living room. You can't bring home classified stuff and leave it around. So her work wasn't classified. According to her passport, her last trip out of the States was 2 years ago. She wasn't a field agent, at least not any longer, according to you. Her youngest child wasn't even a year old. She probably was pulled from the field because of that. But she was back working on something, probably considered routine. She found something. That's why she was targeted. I doubt it was directly related to her work.
Blue Man took this in, his head nodding approvingly.
You analyze well, Roby. I'm impressed.
And I'm full of questions. Do you know what she had stumbled onto?
No, we don't. But like you, we don't think it was tied to her official duties.
Why do you want me to act as the liaison with the Bureau? That's a big risk, particularly if they find out what I've been doing the last dozen years.
Which they won't. Like you said, one person or a group, if determined enough, can accomplish the impossible. Give me your theory.
Someone found out what she had discovered and they ratted her. We have a mole on our side, as evidenced by the actions of my handler and others, and the hit was carried out. They weren't sure I would pull the trigger, so they had a backup. He had no compunction about blowing the kid and his mother away. And you said my handler had been reassigned. That was a lie. I don't need lies from you.
How do you figure it was a lie?
He ordered me to kill Wynn. You said that wasn't authorized. So the guy's a traitor. You don't reassign traitors. If you had him in custody, you wouldn't need me telling you what happened and theorize why. That means the handler has disappeared, along with whoever else he was working with. How many are we talking?
Blue Man sighed. We think at least three other people in the chain, but there might be more.
Roby just stared at him.
Blue Man looked down, fiddled with a silver-plated spoon on the immaculate white linen tablecloth.
It's not good, certainly.
Understatement of the year. What exactly do you want me to do?
We have to keep tabs on the investigation without seeming to. So officially, you will be a special agent with DCIS, but you will actually be reporting to me. We'll provide you with all the cover and creds you need. They're being placed at your apartment as we speak.
Ruby's face darkened. You say you've got at least four traitors. What if you actually have more? And what if one of them is at my apartment right now?
These agents were pulled from an entirely separate division. They've had no contact with your handler. Their loyalty is above question.
Right. Forgive me if I think that's bullshit.
At some point you have to trust, Roby.
No, I don't. And everyone is okay with me joining the hunt?
DCIS is on board. Would you like to talk to the National Security Advisor? Or the Deputy Director of CIA?
Right now, it wouldn't matter to me what they said. But why me?
Because you didn't pull the trigger, ironically enough. We trust you to do the right thing, Roby. There aren't many I can say that about right now.
Roby had thought of another possible reason why they wanted him involved.
I was there. Which means I'll make the perfect fall guy if this all goes to hell. But he said, all right. His reasoning was straightforward. He would prefer to work the case himself and bring some sort of resolution and sense of justice to it, rather than wait for someone else to do it, and maybe screw it and him beyond repair. If I go down, he thought, I go down by my own hand. Blue Man rose and put out his hand. Thank you. And good luck. Roby didn't shake his hand. It's almost never about luck. We both know that. He turned and walked out of the Hay Adams, back into a world that seemed a little more unfamiliar and daunting than when he had walked in. Chapter 25. Everything was waiting for Roby when he got back to his apartment. That was not entirely comforting. None of my traps were tripped, he thought. He looked over the file, the creds, and his background information. He had come up to speed on this case as fast as possible, but fast-tracking something like this meant that mistakes could be made, and probably will be. Then it became a case of how fast his support from Blue Man would fade away. Faster than the party and financial support of a candidate with plummeting poll numbers, he thought. It was just how the town worked. The name Will Roby stared back at him from the creds. Ironically, his real name was the safest one to use for this sort of assignment. Roby picked up the badge and ID card pack and put it in his jacket. Also waiting for him was a fresh Glock G20 and a shoulder holster. He was glad to rid himself of the .38 throwaway. He strapped it on and buttoned his jacket. As he headed out, Roby looked down the hall and watched as she unlocked her door. Annie Lambert turned to him. She was in a black business suit and sneakers with white ankle socks.
Hello, Will.
Don't usually see you here in the middle of the day.
I forgot something. Lunchtime was the first chance I've had to come and get it. What are you all dressed up for?
Just a meeting. How did your chill session go?
What? Oh, it went fine.
The inquiries into Lambert, triggered by her contact with Roby, had turned up nothing. Not surprising. To work at the White House, one had to be squeaky clean. He said, sorry I left so abruptly, I was just tired.
No problem. I was too, actually.
She hesitated and said in a subdued voice,
but maybe we can have that drink sometime.
Yeah, maybe we can, said Roby, who was thinking of all that lay ahead of him.
Okay,
she said uncertainly. He started to walk off and then stopped, realizing that he'd once more been abrupt with her. He turned to her. I appreciate the offer, Annie, I really do. And I want to have a drink with you. She brightened.
That'd be great.
And let's do it soon. Real soon.
Why, are you going somewhere?
No, but I've wanted to start getting out more, and I'd like to do that with you. Her smile widened.
Okay, Will, you know where I live.
He walked off and wondered why he was suddenly so taken with the young woman. She was lovely and obviously smart, and maybe she was smitten with him. But in the past, that had not mattered to Roby. He turned and looked back at her apartment. She had gone inside, but he had the image of her standing there in the tennis shoes and the business suit. He smiled. Roby drove his Audi to the crime scene. With his creds, he was able to park within the security perimeter. On the way, he had looked at his tracking device as he passed the hotel where Julie was staying. She was still there. He walked to the apartment building's entrance, feeling enormously uncomfortable. He was going to help investigate a murder at which he was an eyewitness. There was a pack of cops and suits huddled in the lobby of the building. Roby made his way to them, thinking he would check in and introduce himself to the people running the case. The huddle started breaking up as he approached. Out from its middle stepped the same female FBI special agent he had seen at the bus bombing. She came forward, looking at him inquisitively. He pulled his cred pack, flashed first the badge and then ID card. She reciprocated with her cred pack. It said she was FBI Special Agent Nicole Vance.
Agent Roby, welcome to the show. I've got some questions for you.
I look forward to working on this case with you, Agent Vance.
I got a call from my supervisor about you. We're to associate you with the case, but purely for background information on the deceased, and any other information that will help us solve the case. But the FBI has the lead, meaning I have the lead.
I didn't mean to imply otherwise. Vance seemed to study him more closely.
Okay, just so long as we understand the ground rules.
What would you like my help on?
Any background you can give us on the victim?
Roby pulled a flash drive from his jacket pocket. Her official background file is contained on here. She took the drive and handed it to one of her associates.
Get it read and summarized ASAP.
She turned back to Roby.
We were just about to go over the crime scene again. Care to join us?
I'd appreciate that. My superiors want to know I'm earning my pay. This comment earned him a smile.
I guess Fed agencies all operate similarly.
I guess they do. As they headed to the elevator, Vance said,
Did you hear about the bus explosion?
I saw it on the news, said Roby. I understand FBI is investigating that, too.
More specifically, I am.
A lot on your plate.
Might be a good reason to merge the investigations.
Why is that?
We found a gun at the scene of the bus explosion.
Roby kept his gaze straight ahead, even as his heartbeat quickened. Gun?
Yeah, and we've already run ballistics. The Glock we found matches a slug we took from the floor of the apartment the deceased lived in. So in my mind, the two cases are definitely connected. Now we just have to find out how.
The killer might have just thrown the gun away during his escape. Might just be a coincidence it was found near the bus explosion.
I don't believe in coincidences. At least not ones like that.
As they stepped off the elevator and headed to the condo where two people had been murdered right in front of him, Roby, despite the cool air, wicked a drop of sweat off his forehead. He would take 100 megalomaniacal Saudi princes and bloodthirsty cartel chieftains over this. Chapter 26. The apartment had changed since Roby had last been there. The cops were doing a thorough forensic search, and fingerprint powder residue, evidence markers, and 35mm cameras flashing off were evident throughout the small space. Roby eyed a sealed evidence box on the particle board table. Is that Agent Wynn's work papers? Laptop? Vance nodded.
It is. We've sealed it pending your agency's review. I'm cleared all the way on things like that, but I didn't want to step on your toes.
Appreciate that.
But we will need to be read in. If there's something in those docs and files that got her killed, the Bureau needs to know it.
Understood. I can have the review done today, and you can be read in directly after. Vance's smile was guarded.
I never met a more cooperative agency liaison. You're going to spoil me.
I'll do my best, Roby said. Until I stop being cooperative, he thought.
There were pick marks on the front door lock. They were subtle, so the person knew what he was doing. Follow me.
They walked into the bedroom. Roby looked around. The bodies had been removed, but in his mind, he still saw them on the bed, their heads pulverized.
Wind and her son Jacob were found on the bed. She was holding him. One shot killed them both.
She pointed to the shattered window.
We've run a trajectory. Shot came from that high-rise building, well over 300 meters away. We're pinpointing the exact room. The building is abandoned, so it's doubtful anyone saw anything. But we're still following up. If we're lucky, the shooter left something behind.
You won't be that lucky, thought Roby. But you said you found a Glock round in the floor. How does that tie into a shot at that distance? It wasn't a pistol round that killed them. Had to be a rifle round.
I know. That's what's so puzzling. If I have to speculate, there were two people involved. The person in this room last night fired a shot into the bed. It went through and lodged in the floor. That slug matched the gun we found underneath a car next to the bus explosion. But the kill shot came through the window, hit Jacob, passed through his head, and impacted his mother. Death was instantaneous for both. Or so the ME said.
Roby remembered the look on Jane Wynn's face and wondered how truly instantaneous her death had been. So two shooters. Doesn't make a lot of sense.
It makes no sense. But that's because we don't have enough facts. We collect enough of those, it will make sense.
I appreciate your optimism. Roby stood in front of the bed, in nearly the exact spot from which he'd fired his weapon the night before. So, the shooter who presumably broke into the apartment fired into the bed. Where was the slug found? Vance motioned for one of her techs to move aside the bed. Roby saw the evidence marker next to a hole in the wooden floor. Roby held up an imaginary pistol. He aimed and clicked his finger while Vance watched. He would have been standing about here, said Roby, who, of course, knew this for a fact. The mattress and box springs seem really thin. I doubt they would have diverted the flight path of the round much, not at this close range.
That's what I figured, too.
No other wounds on the bodies? The round fired into the mattress didn't hit them?
Negative. No human residue on it and no other wounds on the victims.
So he fired a shot into the mattress, why? To get their attention?
Maybe.
Were they awake when they were shot?
Looked to be. The position where they fell on the bed leads me to believe they were awake when they were killed.
So he fires, but doesn't hit them. He did it to get their attention, or maybe to get them to be quiet. Anyone report hearing any screams? Vance sighed.
If you can believe it, the only person who lives on this floor and was here last night is an old woman who's both deaf and blind. She, of course, heard nothing. The only other floor resident was working in Maryland at the time. The apartments above and below this one are vacant.
No, I believe it, thought Roby. But the round from outside killed them, he said. He went over to the broken window and examined it. He looked outside, beyond to the building he could not see last night. The alleyway was down below, the one he was supposed to use to make his escape. There were other buildings separating the two high-rise structures, but they were all one story. The shooter would have had a clean shot. Okay, gunman inside, shooter outside. Gunman fires into the bed, shooter outside kills Agent Wind and her son. He turned back to Vance. Wind had two sons.
That's the other really puzzling piece. Her other son is less than a year old. His name is Tyler, by the way. He was found by a woman on the third floor.
Found? How?
It's crazy, Roby. Someone knocked on her door shortly after the Winds were killed. At least according to the preliminary time of death the ME gave us. The woman opened the door and there was Tyler in his car carrier, sound asleep. She recognized him as Wind's son and tried phoning her, then went to her apartment. No one answered, so she called the cops. That's when the bodies were discovered.
You have a theory for that? She shook her head.
I know this sounds unbelievable, but it might be that whoever broke into Wynn's apartment took the kid down there.
Why?
Why kill an infant? He can't testify against you.
They had no problem killing the other son.
Been thinking about that. Look at the hole in the window, and then look at the bed. If Wynn had grabbed up her other son, maybe to protect him against the intruder, he might have been on the left side, in other words, facing the window.
Roby finished this thought for her. Shooter fires, really only aiming to hit Wind, but the shot hits the kid first and then her. Maybe he intended to kill them both, or at least wanted to kill Wind, and if the kid was in the way, too bad.
That's how I see it. So that sets up an interesting possibility.
Such as?
How's this for a theory? Intruder comes in, just a standard burglary. He doesn't mean to, but somehow awakens Wind and her son. He fires a shot into the bed to keep them quiet. At the same time, unbeknownst to him or Wind, of course, a shooter is targeting her from that other building at the exact same time. He fires, killing her and her son. The intruder is stunned. He could have ducked down, thinking he might be shot next. He sees the other kid in the carrier, grabs it up, and during his escape drops him off at another apartment. Then he gets away.
I thought you didn't believe in coincidences, said Roby. She smiled weakly.
I know. It's like the mother of all coincidences, isn't it?
It's also exactly what happened, thought Roby. Chapter 27. They were in the other building, from where the kill shot had come. It was abandoned, filthy, full of junk, easy to get into and out of. In other words, it was perfect. Roby and Vance had looked through several rooms that could have served as the shooter's sanctuary.
When they entered the fifth one, Roby said, "This is it." Vance froze, and hands on hips looked at him.
"Why?"
Roby walked over to one of the windows. Window is open a notch, none of the others were. The sight line is dead on. He pointed at the windowsill. "And the dust has been disturbed. Check the pattern. Muzzle mark." He pointed at a dark stain the size of a dime farther along on the sill. "Residue from the discharge." He looked down at the concrete floor. "Knee imprints in the dirt." He used the sill as his center of support, lined up his shot, and took it. He knelt down, slipped out his gun, took aim through the window, lining up his iron sights with the window with the hole in it across the way. There's a rack of lights on that taller building on the opposite side of the street where Wynn lived. At night, those lights would be on. A shooter would be looking right at them, and that would screw his shot into the fourth floor over there. Except not from this spot. The angle is perfect. He rose, put his gun away. "This is it." Vance looked impressed.
"You have special forces in your background?"
"If I did, I couldn't tell you."
"Come on, I know lots of former Delts and SEALs."
"I'm sure you do." She looked out the window.
"I also know some people at DCIS. I texted them about you. None of them have heard of you."
"I just came back into the country," said Roby, transitioning into his cover story. "If you really want to check me out, call DCIS. I can give you my direct superior's contact info."
"Okay. And I will. So my burglar theory and separate shooter theory look sound. I can't see how the guy in the apartment last night could have known about the shooter over here."
"You're right, I didn't," thought Roby.
"But now the question becomes, why kill Wind? What was she working on for your people? I'll need to know that."
"I'll check with my folks, but it could be something she stumbled onto."
"Stumbled onto? How does that make sense?"
"Not saying it does, only saying it has to be considered. Just because she worked for DCIS doesn't mean that was the reason she was killed."
"Okay, but forgive me if I take as my working hypothesis that her death was related to her work."
"That's your prerogative. Has her ex been notified?"
"In the process. Her son is with social services for now."
"What's her former husband do?"
"You don't know?"
"Not without looking at the file, no. I was just assigned to this case, Agent Vance. Cut me a little slack."
"Okay, sorry. Rick Wind. He's retired military, but he has another job. We're in the process of tracking him down now."
"In the process of tracking him down? He'd have to have seen the news. He should have called you by now."
"Believe me, Roby, I thought of that."
"You have his home address?"
"Maryland. My agents have already been there. It's empty."
"You said he has a job. Where does he work?"
"He owns a pawn shop in Northeast D.C., Bladensburg Road. Place called the Premium Pawn Shop. Not the greatest part of town, but then you don't usually find pawn shops next to the Ritz, do you?"
"Premium Pawn Shop? Catchy. Anybody tried to reach him there?"
"No one's there either, all locked up."
"So where is the guy?"
"If I knew that, I would have told you."
"If he's not at home and he's not at work and he hasn't called the police, then there are only a few possibilities."
"He either doesn't watch TV, listen to the radio, or have any friends. Or he killed his soon-to-be ex-wife and kid and is on the run. Or else he's dead, too."
"That's right. But you really think the guy killed his ex and kid using a sniper rifle? Domestic issues like that are usually face-to-face."
"Well, he was former military, and they were getting divorced."
"So it was not amicable?"
"I don't know. I'm making inquiries. Maybe you can help on that score. She's with your agency, after all."
He ignored this. "Jane Wind have any family in the area that you know of?" She looked at him quizzically.
"Are you sure you two are from the same agency?"
"It's a big agency."
"Not that big. FBI dwarfs it."
"FBI dwarfs pretty much everybody. So, family in the area?"
"None. Neither apparently does a hubby. At least, that we can find. But I've been working this case for less than 8 hours.
"Have you searched his home and the pawn shop?"
"Home, yes. Nothing that helped us. Pawn shop, next. You care to tag along?"
"Absolutely." Chapter 28. The Bucars pulled up in front of the premium pawn shop, and Roby and Vance stepped from one, while two other FBI agents climbed out of their vehicle. There were bars across the front door and windows of the pawn shop. The door had three serious locks. The businesses next to it were gutted, with blackened plywood nailed against their fronts. Trash littered the streets, and Roby spotted a couple of druggies stumbling along. Vance sent the other two agents to check the rear of the building, while she and Roby approached the front. She shaded her eyes and peered inside.
Can't see anything.
Can you knock down the door, or do you need a warrant?
Rick Wynn's house was less problematic. We suspected he might be hurt. This place is obviously closed.
He could be inside, hurt or dead, said Roby, joining her at the front of the pawn shop and peering between the bars into the darkened interior. That should be enough.
And if we find evidence he committed the crime, and his defense lawyer gets it thrown out because our search was determined to be unlawful under the Fourth Amendment?
I guess that's why you FBI agents get the big bucks.
And the big career derailment.
How about I kick open the door and search the place?
Still have the same evidentiary problem?
Yeah, but it'll be my career that's derailed, not yours.
I'm here with you.
I'll tell them I did it all on my own, against your express instructions. He examined the door and the framing around it. Steel on steel, tough stuff. But there's always a way.
What kind of Fed are you?
She asked, her eyebrows hiked. Not the career-kissing type, obviously. Stay here.
Roby, you can't just...
He drew his pistol, fired three times, and the trio of locks fell out onto the sidewalk.
Holy shit!
Exclaimed Vance as she jumped back. They heard running feet, as the other two agents were no doubt coming to find out what had happened. An alarm will probably go off, said Roby calmly. You might want to call the cops and tell them not to bother. Before she could say anything, he opened the door and stepped inside. No alarm went off. Roby did not take that as a positive sign. He kept his gun out, felt for the light switch, hit it, and the pawn shop was quickly draped in weak light. Roby had been in pawn shops before, and this looked pretty typical. Watches, lamps, rings, and an assortment of other items were stacked neatly in bins or inside glass cabinets. All had tags with numbers written on them. The man's military background, thought Roby. You never lost that precision. Or at least most didn't. But the floorboard smelled of urine, and the ceiling was blackened with decades of grime. Roby didn't know what the place had been before it was a pawn shop, but it had not worn well. There was a cash register cage. Roby noted the bulletproof glass. There were scratches on the glass, and what looked to be too dense from gunshots. Upset customers or people looking to rip the guy off. Ex-military Rick Wynn probably dealt with that with his own hardware. Roby figured there were at least two guns in that cage somewhere. He looked toward the ceiling corners and saw the camera, mounted in one. It had a direct shot of the cage. That might come in handy. Roby moved forward, doing visual sweeps. He heard nothing except the sounds of life outside. A breeze pushed through the open door, rustling lampshades and lifting tags on the merchandise. When he heard footsteps behind him, he turned to see Vance there, gun out, her expression seriously pissed off.
You're an idiot.
I told you to stay outside, he whispered back.
You don't tell me to do anything. Not unless you want your ass.
Roby put a finger to his lips. He'd heard it before her. A squeak, and then another. He pointed to the back of the shop. She nodded, her angry expression gone. Roby led the way, turning down one aisle, and rode it back to a pair of swinging doors with a gap between. The doors were moving slightly, but that was not the source of the squeak. He looked at Vance, pointed to himself and then the door, and then motioned to the right. She nodded in understanding and took up position on his right flank. Roby lifted one foot, kicked one of the swinging doors open and bulled inside, his gun making arcs and ready to fire as he stepped to the left. Vance followed on the right and cleared that part of the room. Nothing. She looked down and grimaced as the gray critter skittered into a darkened corner.
Rats,
Roby looked down and saw the animal's tail before it whisked out of sight. I don't think rats squeak like that.
Then what?
That. He pointed to one darkened corner of the room on the left side. Vance looked that way and caught a breath. The man was hanging upside down from the exposed rafter. They approached. His body was swinging slightly, and the rope was squeaking against the wooden beam. Roby looked at the slit between the pair of swing doors. Acted like a funnel with the front door open, with the wind outside. Got the body to move a bit. Vance looked at the dead man. He was black, and green, and purple. Is that Rick Wynn?
Who the hell can tell? He's been dead a while.
Didn't kill himself. Hands are bound, not strangulation. He touched the man's arm. And he didn't kill his wife and kid. Condition of the body means he was dead before they were. Rigors long since passed. Roby bent over and looked at the man's open mouth. And there's something else.
What?
It seems they cut out his tongue. Chapter 29. Roby had left Agent Vance to deal with the new body in the pawn shop. They had confirmed that it was Rick Wynn. The cause of death was not obvious and would probably require a medical examiner to figure out. They had checked the surveillance camera in the pawn shop. Someone had taken the DVD. Roby was now sitting in his apartment typing on his computer. He was not working the murders of Jane Wynn and her ex-husband. He had his mind on something else, at least for now. He typed in the name Gerald Dixon. He got too many hits because it was too common a name. He switched tactics, going from Google to a more exclusive database to which he had access. The hits that came back were more manageable. He refined his search, utilizing other databases. It finally narrowed to one name. Roby looked at the street address. It did not match the one that Julie had gone to in the cab. But one line on the man's record caught his attention. Foster care provider. The guy and his wife took in foster kids. He wrote down the address and then checked his tracking device. Its range was long enough for it to reach here. Julie had not moved from the crummy hotel. That seemed unusual, unless she was afraid of being spotted. In any event, she apparently was no longer interested in leaving town. He wondered what had changed her mind. Was it the house where she had stopped? Roby was going to find out, but he had somewhere else to go first. Gerald Dixon lived in a two-story duplex in a lousy neighborhood. When Roby knocked on the door, it took a long time to get a response, and he heard noises inside that bespoke of frenzied activity. When the guy finally opened the door, Roby noted the crimson patches on his cheeks, the bloodshot eyes, and the smell of breath freshener that shot like a cannonball from his mouth. The idiot's been slapping himself to get sober and sucking on Listerine to hide the booze smell. The foster care standards must be plummeting in this country. Yeah? The man said in an unfriendly tone. Gerald Dixon?
Oh, Aunt Steno.
Roby flashed his badge. I'm with D.C. Internal Affairs. Dixon took a step back. He was an inch shorter than Roby, but unhealthily thin. Most of his hair was gone, though he couldn't have been much over 40. He had the pale, translucent skin and jerky manner of someone whose body and mind had been substance abused to the point of no return.
Internal Affairs? Ain't that for cops?
It's for a lot of things, said Roby, including your situation. May I come in?
Why?
To talk about Julie. It was Roby's gut instinct that the girl had used her real first name. Dixon's face screwed up.
If you find her, you tell her she better get her butt back here. If she ain't here, I don't get paid.
So she's gone missing.
That's right.
Can I come in? Dixon looked put out but nodded, stepped back, and let Roby pass through. The inside of the house looked no better than the outside. They sat on tattered chairs. Baskets of dirty laundry were piled everywhere. But Roby had a notion that before he knocked on the door, all the clothes had been strewn on the floor. He also noted papers and the edge of a beer can sticking out from under a chair. He wondered what else was under there. His seat was very hard. He didn't think it was the cushion. A small, curvy woman wearing tight jeans and an even tighter blouse came out of the back, wiping her hands on her pants leg. She looked to be at most 30. She had mousy brown hair, a heavily made-up face, and the air of someone who was totally disconnected from reality. She lit up a cigarette and eyed Roby.
Who's he?
Some dude from Internal Affairs, growled Dixon. Roby flipped open his badge. I'm here to talk about Julie. And smoking around our children is prohibited, he added. The woman quickly stubbed the cigarette out on a tabletop.
Sorry,
she said without sounding sorry in the least. The woman snapped.
She's gone. Run off. Little shit never appreciated what we gave her.
And you are? Asked Roby.
Patty. Jerry and me are married.
How many foster kids do you have currently?
Two, not counting that shit Julie.
I would prefer if you didn't refer to one of the children under our responsibility as a shit, Roby said firmly. Patty glanced at her husband.
Is he with the foster care people?
He told me Internal Affairs, said Gerald, looking betrayed. I'm with the government, said Roby. That's all you two need to know. So where are the other kids? Patty adopted a loving, matronly tone.
In school,
she said, smiling.
We send those little angels to school every day, just like we're supposed to.
Roby heard a sound from upstairs. You have kids of your own? He asked, glancing upward. Gerald and Patty exchanged a nervous glance. He said, We got two of our own, little ones. Don't go to school yet. That's them up there, probably reading. They're real advanced for their ages. Right. Now, about Julie. He opened a notebook he drew from his jacket. Gerald Dixon's eyes widened as he saw the revealed weapon. You're carrying a gun? That's right, said Roby.
I thought this was about foster care.
This is about what I say it's about, and if you two want to stay out of serious trouble, I suggest you cooperate fully. Roby had decided he was done playing nice with these idiots. He didn't have the time or the desire. Gerald sat up straighter, and Patty sat down next to him. Roby said, Tell me about Julie.
Is she in trouble?
Asked Gerald. Tell me about her, repeated Roby firmly. Full name, background, how she came to be here, everything.
Don't you already know that?
Roby looked at her with a face of granite. I'm here to confirm the information we already have, Mrs. Dixon, and please keep in mind the request I made for cooperation and then focus on the possible consequences of not cooperating. Gerald sharply elbowed his wife and snapped, Just shut up and let me handle this. He turned back to Roby. Her name is Julie Getty. She came here, about 3 weeks ago. Age? 14. Why was she placed in foster care? Her parents couldn't take care of her. Yeah, that I get. Why couldn't they take care of her? Were they dead? No, I don't think so. See, the agency people don't really tell you that much about that stuff. They just give you kids and you take care of them. Patty added quickly,
Just like they were our own.
Right. Like you said, not counting that shit, Julie. Patty colored and looked down.
Well, I didn't mean it exactly like that.
Gerald added, Truth is, Julie could be a real piece of work. Speaks her mind too much for my taste. And so she's not here anymore? Run off in the middle of the night.
We've been so worried.
And you, of course, reported this, right? Gerald and Patty looked at each other. He said, Well, we were hoping she'd come back.
So we were waiting for a bit.
Has she run off before?
Not this time. Well, except for last night.
Roby looked up from his notes. This time? Was she placed with you before?
3 times.
What happened those times?
Don't know exactly, said Gerald. I think her parents got her back. Remember the caseworker telling me Julie's mom and dad would do that. But then there she'd be, back in foster care.
When was the last time you saw her?
Last night, right after I served her a delicious dinner,
said Patty in a syrupy tone that made Roby want to pull his gun and fire a shot just over her head. And when did you discover her missing?
This morning, when she didn't come down.
So you don't check on your beloved wards at night?
She was very private, said Gerald hastily. We didn't like to butt in.
Roby pulled the empty beer can out from under the chair. I can see that. He waved his hand in the air. And you might want to open some windows. Get the reefer smell out.
We don't do drugs, said Gerald, feigning astonishment.
And I don't know whose that is,
added Patty, pointing at the beer can.
Right, Roby said dismissively. Have you heard from Julie since she left?
They both shook their heads. Any reason to believe someone would want to hurt her? The Dixons looked genuinely surprised by this question. Gerald said,
Why? Has something happened to her?
Just answer the question. Anybody come around here you didn't know? Suspicious cars? Gerald said,
No, nothing like that. What the hell has she got herself involved in, gangs?
Patty put a hand up to her ample bosom.
Do you think we might be in danger?
Roby closed his notebook. I certainly wouldn't rule out the possibility. Some folks don't care who they hurt. He had to fight back a smile. He rose, lifted up the seat cushion, and pulled out a baggie of coke, some vials containing a brown liquid, two capped syringes, and elastic strips used to pop the blood vessel to the surface for ease of injection. And next time, try locating your pharmacy somewhere more private. They both stared down at the drugs and related paraphernalia, but said nothing. As Roby was walking down the street, he saw a woman holding an envelope striding along with two police officers in tow.
You heading to the Dixons? He asked as the woman neared.
Yes, who are you?
Just someone who wants you to make sure they never get foster kids again.
The woman waved the envelope.
Well, your wish has just been granted.
She steamed on with the officers right behind. Roby walked on. Something on his wrist beeped. He looked down at the tracker. Julie Getty was finally on the move, and Roby was pretty sure where. Chapter 30. Julie clambered up the vine and slipped inside her bedroom window. She squatted on the floor, listening. All she could hear were her own heartbeats. Her legs shaky, she moved down the stairs, holding onto the wall for support. She rounded the bend, closed her eyes, and then opened them. It was all she could do not to scream. Roby stared back at her.
You get around, he said.
She looked quickly around the room. There was nothing there except furniture.
Expecting to find something else? He said, moving toward her.
She backed up a step.
How did you get here?
Followed you.
That's impossible.
Nothing's impossible, really. This is your home, right?
She said nothing. Just stared up at him, more in curiosity than fear. He looked at a picture on a side table. Your mom and dad were nice looking. And there you are, right in the center. Happy times, it seems.
You don't know anything.
Correction. I know some things. Like you're in danger. People are looking for you. People who have a lot of money, muscle, and connections.
How do you know that?
Because they covered up two murders right here. Julie's eyes widened.
How did you know that?
Roby motioned to the wall next to where she stood. Fresh paint. But only in that spot. It was put there to cover something up. He pointed to the floor. Used to be square of carpet here. You can see where the wood is lighter. It's gone. Again, covering something up.
How do you know it's about a murder? It could be anything.
No, not anything. You paint walls and remove rugs to take away forensics. Blood, tissue, other bodily fluids. And they missed a spot of blood on the baseboard over there. Did you expect to find their bodies here? They would have been a smell by now, you know. An unmistakable one.
You spend a lot of time around dead bodies?
Ever since I hooked up with you.
We're not hooked up in any way at all.
I know about your foster parents, though calling them parents stretches all credulity.
I don't like that you've been snooping around my life.
The city busted them. The other kids there have been taken away by now. I think you had something to do with that. Julie's angry look faded.
They didn't deserve to be treated like that. No little kid does.
Now tell me what happened here.
Why?
Like I said, I want to help you.
Why?
Call me a good Samaritan.
There aren't any of those left.
Not even your parents?
You leave my parents out of this.
Did you see how they died? Is that why you are on the run? Julie backed up until she was against the wall. For a moment, Roby thought she was going to run for it, and he wasn't sure what he would do if she did. Were they mixed up in something over their heads? Drugs?
My mom and dad wouldn't hurt anyone, and no, this had nothing to do with drugs.
So they were killed. Just a simple nod will do. She moved her head forward a notch. You saw that happen? Another nod. Then you need to go to the police.
If I go to the police, they'll put me right back in foster care, and then those people will find me.
The guy on the bus, he was the one?
I think so.
Julie, tell me exactly what happened. It's the only way I can help you. If last night showed you nothing else, it's that I'm someone who can get things done.
What about those people on the TV? Did you kill them? A mom and her kid? You said you didn't do it, but I need to know the truth.
Well, if I did kill them, there's no way in the world I would admit it. But if I did do it, why would I be here trying to help you? Give me a reason. She let out a long breath, played with the straps on her backpack.
Do you swear you didn't kill them?
I swear I didn't kill them. I'm working with the FBI right now to try and figure out who did. He pulled out his badge and showed it to her.
Okay. I guess it's cool. I got away from the Dixons and came here last night. I hadn't been home very long when I heard someone come in. I thought it was my parents, but someone else was with them. He was yelling at them, asking them stuff.
Roby drew a few steps closer. Asking them what? Try to be as precise as you can. Julie screwed up her face, thinking.
He said, how much do you know? What have you been told? Stuff like that. And then...
He hurt one of them. Tears trickled down her face.
I heard a gunshot. I ran down the stairs, and the guy looked at me. My dad was against the wall over there. He was all bloody. The guy pointed the gun at me, but my mom hit him, and he fell down. I didn't want to leave. I wanted to stay and help her, but she told me to run.
Julie shut her eyes, but the tears eased out from under her eyelids.
I went back to my bedroom and climbed out the window. Then I heard another shot, and I ran hard. I was a coward. I knew that shot meant my mom was dead, but I just ran. I was a shit. I just left her to die.
She opened her eyes and stiffened when she saw Roby standing next to her. And if you hadn't run, you'd be dead. And that would have done no one any good. Your mom saved your life. She sacrificed her life for yours. So you did the right thing, because you did what your mom wanted you to do. Stay alive. Roby handed her a tissue from a box on the table, and she dried her tears and then blew her nose.
So what now?
Do you think anyone around here heard the shots?
I doubt it. The place next door is empty. So is the duplex across the street. This used to be an okay neighborhood, but then everybody lost their jobs.
Including your parents?
They worked at whatever they could find. My mom went to college.
She added proudly.
My dad was a good guy.
She looked down.
He just sometimes got down on himself, felt like the whole world was against him.
What were their names?
Curtis and Sarah Getty.
No relation to the Getty Oil folks, I guess.
If so, nobody ever told us.
Okay, here's my plan. We find out who killed your parents and why.
But if it was the guy on the bus, he's clearly dead.
Did you leave from this house last night and go directly to the bus stop?
Yes.
Then the guy wasn't alone. He couldn't have policed this place, gotten rid of two bodies, and made it to the bus. There have to be others.
But why my parents? I loved them, but it's not like they were important or anything.
You sure they weren't involved in drug dealing or gangs or anything?
Look, if they were drug kingpins, do you think they'd be living in this place?
So no enemies?
No. At least not that I know of.
Where did they work?
Dad at a warehouse in Southeast, Mom at a diner a few blocks from here.
So your dad would go over there for meals, maybe?
Yeah. I spent a lot of time at the diner, too. Why?
Just digging for info.
I want to leave here. Like, right now. This isn't my home anymore.
Okay, where do you want to go?
I got a place I'm staying.
Yeah, I tracked you down there. And it was stupid to steal and use Dixon's credit card. They'll bust you for that. And more importantly, people can track you.
How did you...
She stopped and looked annoyed.
I have cash.
Save it for now.
So where do I go? Not back to your safe house. It's too far out of town.
No, I've got another place. Why don't you pack some things and come on? Chapter 31. Roby waited until well after dark. They spent the time in between getting something to eat at a mom-and-pop restaurant on 8th Street. Roby asked more questions of the young woman, gently probing. She pushed back. She would make a good cop, Roby thought. Her tendency to give away as little as possible was remarkable, particularly for a generation that routinely posted the most intimate details about themselves on Facebook. Roby drove Julie to his neighborhood in Rock Creek Park. Only he didn't take her to his building. He took her to the observation post across the street. Like the farmhouse, no one other than Roby knew about it. They walked in. He turned off the alarm system, and she looked around.
This is your place?
Sort of.
Are you rich?
No.
You seem rich to me.
Why?
You have a car and two homes. That's pretty rich, especially these days.
I guess it is. He actually had another home right across the street, but she didn't need to know that. He showed her how to use the alarm system and then let her look around. She picked out her bedroom from the two there. She dropped her backpack and a second bag she'd packed before leaving her house on the bed and continued to wander around the apartment.
What's the telescope for?
Stargazing.
That's not an astronomical telescope, and there's not really an angle here to point it skyward.
You know about telescopes?
I do go to school, you know.
I like to watch things, he said, especially to see if people are watching me.
So, are we going to be, like, staying here together?
She looked nervous by this prospect. No, I'm staying somewhere else, but it's close by.
So you have three places? What do you do for a living? I think I want to do it, too.
You should have everything you need. He took a cell phone out of his pocket. This is for you. It's got my number loaded on speed dial. It's untraceable, so feel free to use it any time.
How far away will you be?
I thought you were nervous that we were going to be staying here together.
Look, I know you're not some creep who gets off on underage girls, okay?
How do you know that?
Because I've had to deal with those sorts of jerks before. I know what to look for. You don't have the signs.
Did you learn that in foster care? She didn't answer him. And Roby thought about Gerald Dixon and wondered if he should have just shot the prick when he had the chance. You should have everything you need. I stocked up the kitchen last week. Anything else? Give me a call.
What about school?
This caught Roby off guard. Shows what a great parent I'd make. Where do you go to school? He asked.
At a G&T program in Northeast DC.
G&T, that's a cocktail.
Not gin and tonic, gifted and talented.
You're 14, so you're in the 9th grade?
10th.
How so?
I skipped a grade.
Pretty smart then.
In some things. In other things, I can be pretty stupid.
Like what?
I don't like highlighting my weaknesses.
Considering what happened to your parents, I'm not sure I want you going back to school. Whoever killed them will know where you go, or it'll be easy enough to find out.
I can use the cell phone to text my program coordinator and feed her some bullshit.
You think you're smarter than all adults?
No, but I'm smart enough to know how to lie and make it sound like the truth.
She looked at him closely.
I think you're probably really good at that, too.
The foster care people will be looking for you.
I know. Won't be the first time. They'll go to my parents' house. They'll think they skipped town and took me with them. Then they'll go to the school, find out I texted my coordinator, assume I'm okay, and that'll be a dead end. They've got too many kids in the pipeline, a lot worse off to spend any more time on me.
Thinking several moves ahead, that's good. You play chess?
I play life.
I get that.
So how close will you be?
Pretty close.
I'm not just going to sit in this place and do nothing. I'm going to help you find the people who got my parents killed.
You can leave that to me.
Screw that. If you don't let me help, I won't be here when you come back.
Roby sat down in a chair and stared at her. Let's get something really straight. You're a smart kid, you know the streets, but the people who are after you are at a whole different level. They will kill anyone who gets in their way.
Sounds like you know the type real well.
When Roby said nothing, she said,
The guy on the bus, the way you got us away from the dude in the alley, the way you analyzed the crime scene at my parents' house, the way you tracked me down, and you said you were working with the FBI. You're not just some guy in a cubicle working 9 to 5. You've got safe houses and guns and untraceable phones and telescopes pointed at who knows what.
She paused and then added,
You kill people too, I bet.
Roby still said nothing. Julie looked out the window.
My parents were all I had. I ran away when I could have stayed and helped them. Now they're dead. I know I'm young, but I can help you if you just give me a chance.
Roby looked out the window too. Okay, we'll do this together, but it'll be tricky.
So what do I do first?
You have a paper and pen in your bag?
Yes, and I have the laptop my school gave me.
How long ago did you see your parents?
About a week.
Okay, you write down everything you can remember about the last couple of weeks. I want you to try and recall anything you saw, heard, or suspected, anything your parents said, no matter if it seemed insignificant, and anyone else around who they knew or were talking to.
Is this busy work or is it really important?
Neither one of us has time to waste on busy work. This is stuff we need.
Okay, I'll do it. I'll start tonight.
He rose to go.
Will?
Yeah?
I'll make a good partner. You'll see.
I have no doubt, Julie. But his gut was ice. He much preferred to work alone. He didn't like having another life riding on him. Chapter 32.
Roby, got time for a cup of coffee?
It was Nicole Vance on the phone. Roby had answered the call on his way down the elevator after leaving Julie. He'd given the teenager a key to the apartment, but asked her not to leave it without checking with him first. And he had told her to set the alarm. Anything break on the case? He asked the FBI agent.
There's a place open late near 1st and D Southeast called Donnelly's. I can be there in 10 minutes.
Give me 10 more than that.
Hope I'm not interrupting anything.
I'll see you there. Roby grabbed his car from the street. The traffic across town was light at this hour. He parked on 1st and gazed up at the Capitol Dome in the background. 535 members of Congress plied their trade near here in various buildings named after long-dead politicians. They, in turn, were surrounded by an army of lobbyists, flush with cash, who worked relentlessly to convince the elected officials of the unassailable righteousness of their causes. Such was democracy. Donnelly's was busy for the lateness of the hour. Most of the patrons were drinking something stronger than coffee. When Roby hit the doorway, Vance caught his eye from the back of the main room. He sat across from her. Her clothes were off-duty ones because she'd been home. Slacks, flats, light blue sweater, corduroy jacket. Good choices for the chill in the air. Her hair was down around her shoulders. It had been tied back earlier. Long hair and crime scenes were sometimes problematic. She smelled of a fresh shower with a light dusting of perfume. She must have scrubbed hard, thought Roby. The stink of death could get right into your pores. Her cup of coffee was parked in front of her. With a wave of his hand, Roby got the waitress's attention and pointed at Vance's cup and then at himself. He waited until the woman came with a fresh cup and departed before he focused on Vance. So here I am.
You're a hard man to find.
You only call me once.
No, I mean at DCIS. I called the number you gave me. They confirmed you worked there, but your file is classified.
Nothing earth-shattering about that. Told you I was out of the country for a while. That stuff was classified. Now I'm back. He took a sip of coffee and set his cup back down. Please tell me that's not the only reason you asked for this meeting.
It's not. I don't like to waste time, so here we go.
She pulled a manila folder from the bag sitting next to her. She opened the file and took out some photos and pages.
Background on Rick Wind.
Roby leafed through the photos and written materials. One picture was of Wind and Death, hanging above the urine-smelling floor of his pawn shop. The other photos were of Wind in life, several of him in military uniform. Army, huh?
Career enlisted. Went in at 18, did his full time, and then he was out. He was 43.
Their kids were little. Did they start late?
Jane and Rick Wind were married 10 years. Lots of failed attempts at getting pregnant. Then they hit the jackpot twice in 3 years.